Hello, this is Donna, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the weekend edition of the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Gas prices fall below $4 across the United States, but are still a little higher in New York, by Jeff Herbert. Average U.S. gas prices have fallen below $4 per gallon for the first time since March, though costs are still higher than a year ago. The national average price of gas of a regular gasoline is $3.99 as of Thursday, according to AAA. That's down 13 cents from a week ago and more than half a dollar from a month ago. Prices have come down significantly on news of President Donald Trump's deal with Iran, which led to the Strait of Hormuz reopening for the first time since March. However, pump prices are still nearly a dollar more than the same time last year, when the national average was $3.18 per gallon. In New York State, gas prices have come down more slowly. The average cost of a gallon of regular gas is $4.29 in the Empire State, down about 11 cents from last week. Statewide gas prices were close to the same as the national average in June of 2025 at $3.15 per gallon. Gas prices were below $3 in February before the U.S. war with Iran began. The Associated Press reports stranded ships in the Strait of Hormuz began moving again Thursday, hours after the U.S. and Iran signed the new agreement. One-fifth of the world's oil normally passes through this waterway, affecting global energy costs for months. According to the Associated Press, the agreement between the U.S. and Iran calls for a permanent end to hostilities and starts a 60-day negotiation clock to reach final deals on the future of Iran's nuclear program. Although Trump left the door open to resume attacks, it appears they offer Iran several benefits up front while extracting little in return. Oil prices fell Monday to about $80 for a barrel of U.S. benchmark crude. That's down from a peak of $120 per barrel earlier in the conflict, but still higher than the $67 per barrel price before the war. Analysts say gas prices may take months to go down further as hundreds of ships trapped in the Persian Gulf begin to exit the narrow strait. The AP reports oil producers that scale back production will take time to get back to normal levels. Refineries also typically pay for crude a month in advance, so gas prices will similarly take that time to go further down. Onondaga legislatures offered a small amount of relief by approving a temporary cap on the county's 4% sales tax by taxing only for the first $4 per gallon of fuel. That started that in June 1st of this month. In education news, Skinny Atlas is in the top rated districts that had a 90% proficiency or more, by Kevin Tampone. 11 New York school districts saw 100% of their students test proficient on English language arts regents exams during the 2024-2025 school year, according to state data. Another 66 districts had proficiency levels of at least 95%, and a total of 184 districts statewide had proficiency of 90% or more. The Skinny Atlas Central School District had the highest proficiency levels among school districts in Onondaga County last year at 94%. Four other Onondaga County's districts saw proficiency levels of at least 90%: Fayetteville Manulis, Liverpool, Tully, and West Hill. The Syracuse City School District had the lowest proficiency level in the county and the ELA regions last year at only 37%. The high rankings for suburban schools are not a surprise. Those districts tend to enjoy advantages that the urban schools don't, including money, newer buildings, and updated equipment. Many students in the urban districts, such as Syracuse, live in poverty or have difficult home lives, and those factors bring additional challenges to learning during the school day and ultimately show up in measures of achievements like test scores and graduation rates. The table shows data on Onondaga County schools. Of all the statewide data on ELA Regents exams, it's included with a Syracuse.com version at tinyurl.com/024-25-ELA-Regents. Readers can search by entering a complete or partial district name in the search box or county name and click on the column to sort the table. Only districts with reported results are included in the database. The state does not report proficiency scores publicly if a district's sample size is too small. Students are considered proficient on a region's exams if they get a level 3 or above. The statewide proficiency level for 2024-2025 was 75%. In news from across the nation, Obama Presidential Center opens as the nation marks Juneteenth by Jamie Stengel of the Associated Press. As people gathered across the U.S. to celebrate Juneteenth on Friday, former President Barack Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama welcomed the first visitors to his presidential center. Located on a sprawling campus on Chicago's South Side, the center honoring the nation's first black president has been designed to inspire people to make the change they want to see in their own communities. It's the kind of contemplation that also comes as America's gather for Juneteenth, which celebrates the end of slavery in the United States. The holiday marked June 19, 1865, when Union troops arrived in Galveston, Texas at the end of the Civil War with an order declaring the state's enslaved people to be free with absolute quality. By then, 2.5 years had passed since the Emancipation Proclamation declared the freedom of enslaved people in the South. Juneteenth represents not just a commemoration of the end of slavery, but it's also part of the ongoing struggle for absolute equality and that ideal in American life, said W. Caleb McDaniel, a Rice University professor and author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Sweet Taste of Liberty. The grand opening of the Obama Presidential Center includes days of events following Thursday's star-studded dedication ceremony. In addition to greeting visitors Friday as the center opened to the public for the first time, the couple also read to children that were gathered there. The center's public opening arrives as a symbolic convergence of legacy and liberation. The nation is deeply divided politically and grappling with renewed questions about the arc of racial progress as the Supreme Court hollowed out the Voting Rights Act, endangering black political representation in Congress. This is the fifth year since Juneteenth was designated a federal holiday by former President Joe Biden, who served as Obama's vice president. Juneteenth's birthplace is celebrating with day-long gatherings as the Galveston Park with music and fireworks. Black Texans embraced the date of Granger's arrival as one to celebrate, even as the KKK was established in Texas by 1868. By the 1880s, it was difficult to find a significant community in Texas where it wasn't being marked by African Americans. They made a community celebration. They made it a celebration not for only for freedom, but a demonstration of community empowerment and institution building, he said. Corey Walker, dean of Wake Forest University's Divinity School, said the holiday offered a way to recognize the nation's complex history and what it means to be a U.S. citizen. I think it really reminds people the importance of understanding a fuller, more robust portrait of our nation's history and the many contributions of the many individuals who contributed to America's experiment with democracy, Walker said. In news a little closer to home, the Post Standard and Syracuse.com led all newsrooms in the New York News Publishers Association's 2025 Awards for Excellence. The newsroom won in 9 news categories, more than any other newsroom in the state. More than 270 entries were submitted in the long-running statewide contest that honors outstanding journalism as judged by veteran journalists. Newsrooms compete against similarly sized markets. The group gives only a first-place award. The winners include outstanding coverage of vital community stories, the federal crackdown on immigrants, Micron Technology's plan to build a factory here, Upstate Medical University's overwhelmed emergency room, and the heartbreaking turning point of this SU football season. And here are the winners. Distinguished Investigative Reporting. Michelle Breidenbach for her series of stories on the methods of federal immigration agents and the impact on the community. The judge comment was, the Post Standard's deep reporting on ICE's actions against local residents had all the elements of a solid, well-reported investigation. In this case, the subject was one of national interest. The series helped give a voice to people who were afraid to speak. It did a fine job of deeply reporting on detentions and those human faces victimized by those detentions. The Distinguished Community Service Award was given to Douglas Dowry and N. Scott Trimble for their deep story and eye-opening video on the bad conditions at Upstate University Hospital's crowded emergency room. The coverage helped influence the state to commit $450 million to replace the center. The Distinguished Multimedia Presentation was given to Michelle Breidenbach, Dennis Nett, and Scott Trimble for the multidimensional report on the actions of ICE agents in the Syracuse area and the community's response. The Distinguished Business Reporting Award was given to Glenn Coyne for his investigative and explanatory work on the delayed Micron project, including his scoop of a much-awaited environmental impact report the county would not release. The Distinguished Feature Writing was given to Margaret Eisenstadt and Doug Doughty for their dramatic story on the road rage shooting in the streets of Armory Square, built on interviews and previously unreleased documents. The story revealed the answers in vivid detail about a killing that had remained a mystery for months. Distinguished Feature Photography was given to N. Scott Trimble for his photo of a man with Alzheimer's disease who escaped the poor care at Van Nuys Nursing Home to be cared for by his wife. The Distinguished Editorial Writing was given to Marie Morelli for a series of opinion pieces criticizing the illegality and cruelty of the federal campaign to deport immigrants. The Distinguished Live Sports Coverage was given to Chris Carlson, Yvonne Edmonds, Brent Axe, and Dennis Nett for the Syracuse football upset win over Clemson, in which nation-leading quarterback Steve Angel was injured. His injury ended the team's hopes for a successful season. And finally, the Distinguished Headline Writing was given to Charlie Miller for his clever take on the March Reader Service story, We Guide to Syracuse Bathrooms, the pot of luck you really need on St. Patrick's Day. Congratulations to all the winners. Other news from the business section in the hospitality column, Turning Stone sets opening dates for its new hotel and restaurant in its largest ever expansion by Emily Kulkus. Turning Stone Resort Casino will now officially open a new restaurant and hotel over the next several weeks as part of its largest ever expansion. The $400 million project in Verona began in 2023 and is the largest construction project since the resort opened in 1993. The Oneidas have dubbed the expansion Turning Stone Evolution. The Turning Stone will celebrate with two grand opening events for the Crescent Hotel on July 17th and Salt Restaurant on July 22nd. The hotel will host its first guest on June 29th. The Evolution expansion also includes new convention and conference space called the Grand Expo, which is expected to open by Labor Day. When Evolution is complete, Turning Stone will have more than 1,000 rooms in four hotels and more than 225,000 square feet of events and meeting space. The expansion also includes a new 1,500 space parking garage that doubles current parking capacity. The expansion makes it the largest meeting and convention resort in the states, nation officials said. The hotels and convention spaces are all connected, which will allow guests to remain indoors the entire time. Crescent is Turning Stone's fourth hotel on the property. This new addition will also be home to the Rome Health Convenient Care at Turning Stone, an on-site medical center available to employees and guests. World-renowned restaurant consultant and hospitality expert Elizabeth Blau returned Turning Stone to shape Salt, which is the resort's first new fine dining option since the TS Steakhouse opened on the top floor of the tower in 2012. Salt occupies the entire seventh floor of the 258-room Crescent Hotel and includes three season outdoor terraces that can hold 118 people. The restaurant will specialize in seafood and steaks and feature a raw bar. The space also includes several private dining rooms, which can be specially configured to fit 30 to 60 people. Blau is a three-times James Beard Award semifinalist, including in 2026. She's known for designing all the aspects of the dining experience, and no detail is too small. She previously worked on six Turning Stone restaurants, including Wildflowers, TS, and the Upstate Tavern. Blau earned a master's degree in hotel management from Cornell University. She founded Blau & Associates in 2002. She and her husband, Chef Kim Cantinwala, own Honey Salt restaurants in Vegas and Vancouver, among others. It's going to make something magical. We brought regional ingredients. Even Turning Stone maple syrup has found its way into some of the amazing dishes. I can't wait for people to try it. It was one of the most delicious and creative tastings, but also approachable, she said. Ray Hallbritter, Oneida Nation representative and CEO of Turning Stone Enterprises, noted the same approach in a news release. The Crescent and Salt reflect our commitment to delivering a level of luxury and hospitality that rivals the finest destinations in the world. Elizabeth Blau has helped shape some of our most celebrated dining experiences over the years because she understands what makes Turning Stone special, Halberger said. She helped bring our vision for Salt to life, a restaurant that reimagines fine dining for today's guests while staying true to the hospitality and service that has always defined Turning Stone. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From our Savings Angel column with Josh Josh. Fight subscription fatigue and stop charges from draining your budget. This is a pretty popular item these days. I just saw it recently on the news. It seems everything is a subscription these days. Movies, music, cloud storage, meal kits, fitness apps, video games, software, news websites, pet products, and even toothbrushes can come with a monthly fee. Individuals mostly subscribe, but it doesn't really seem expensive. $5 here, $10 here, maybe $20 for a premium service you enjoy. The problem is these charges pile up quickly and go unnoticed. Most consumers don't realize how much they're spending on subscriptions until they look at their bank statement and discover dozens of reoccurring charges scattered throughout the month. By then, some of the subscriptions may have been running for months or even years without even being used. Subscription fatigue is a real thing, and some companies' sneaky tactics keep the consumers paying. So here's how to regain control of your monthly expenses. One reason subscriptions have become so successful is they remove the pain of paying. When you buy something in a store, you make a conscious decision. You see the price, you hand over your money, and you evaluate whether the purchase was worth it. Subscriptions work differently. Once you're signed up, charges are automatically applied. Months can pass without you thinking much about them, and that's what many companies are counting on. The less often you have to decide whether a service is worth paying for, the more likely you're going to continue paying for it. And one of the most common subscription traps starts with a free trial. There's nothing wrong with free trials. Many companies offer them in good faith. However, some businesses make cancellations intentionally difficult. Before signing up for any free trial, immediately set a reminder on your phone for a few days before that renewal date. If you decide it isn't valuable, cancel it before that first charge is applied to your account. One of the easiest ways to save money is also one of the simplest. Pull up your last two or three bank statements and list every reoccurring charge. Don't just look at your streaming services. Look for cloud storage subscriptions, gaming memberships, premium apps, software subscriptions, monthly boxes, digital newspapers, fitness memberships, and anything that renews automatically. Once you have a complete list, ask yourself this: would I sign up for this service today at its current price? And if the answer is no, maybe it's time to cancel it. Another growing problem is subscription creep. A service may start at $5 per month and then gradually increase over time. Because the increases are often small, consumers don't always notice them. Review your reoccurring charges periodically and compare them to what you originally agreed to pay. Companies frequently notify customers about upcoming prices through email, but a lot of times these get buried under other marketing emails or put into your spam account. Pay attention to the notices. Small increases across multiple subscriptions add up to a significant amount of money over the course of a year. One mistake many households make is keeping every streaming service active year-round. Instead of subscribing to five or six services simultaneously, consider rotating them. Watch the content you want on one platform, cancel it for a while, and switch to another one. Most companies make it easy to restart later, but watch for the fees that they may be included in if you cancel and then come back too soon. The same principle applies to other subscription services. Companies often offer discounts for paying annually instead of monthly. Sometimes this makes sense, but sometimes it doesn't. Before committing to a yearly plan, be honest about whether you're going to use the service for the next 12 months. Saving a few dollars up front isn't a bargain if you stop using it after a few weeks. Annual plans work best for the products and services that are regularly part of your routine. Many consumers treat subscriptions as permanent expenses. Instead, think of them as expenses that must be continually earning your place in your budget. Every few months, review your subscriptions and force them to compete against one another. Would you rather keep that premium music service or save your money? Is that fitness app still helping you? Are you actually using all the features included in your software subscription? When subscriptions regularly justify their costs, unnecessary spending becomes much easier to identify. And some consumers find it helpful to place all subscriptions on a single credit card used exclusively for recurring charges. This creates a simple monthly snapshot of what you're paying for. It's much easier to identify waste when all subscriptions appear in one place rather than be scattered across multiple accounts and cards. Just be sure to pay the balance in full each month. Good advice from our savings angel. And speaking of saving money, let's take a look at a column from Christine Benz from Morningstar about emergency cash sources that you might not anticipate but would like to know about. What if unanticipated expenses exceed your emergency reserves? You have options, and she's ranked them from the most palatable to the least. Your own emergency fund is number one. Emergency funds should be held outside of tax-sheltered wrappers and include highly liquid investments like bank savings accounts, money market accounts, and so on. If you're working, your emergency fund would ideally hold a minimum of 3 to 6 months' worth of living expenses. Retirees should target at least 1 to 2 years' worth of anticipated portfolio withdrawals. We're talking about people who have 401ks and those type of things. Number two is low-risk assets in a taxable account. So your next source of cash is other taxable holdings like investments in brokerage accounts outside tax-sheltered vehicles. When identifying securities you could sell, focus on liquidity, tax consequences, and the transaction fees. In a best-case scenario, you'll have short or intermediate-term bond funds to sell. It's reasonably liquid, and you've already paid taxes on most of the gains. Number three, a Roth IRA contribution. When you can withdraw any Roth IRA contribution, the amount you put in, not the investment earnings, at any time without penalties or tax. The downside, of course, is that you'll have fewer retirement funds working for you. Number four, a life insurance cash value. You can withdraw money outright from your whole life insurance or variable universal life insurance policies and have it deducted from the face value. Those withdrawals are tax-free, assuming they don't exceed the amount that you've put in. A less attractive option is to borrow from the cash value of your life insurance. You'll owe interest payable to the insurance company, and the loan may come with additional cost. You will not owe taxes, but the interest is not tax deductible. A 401k loan. Even though you'll pay interest on a 401k loan, it gets paid back into your account, and the interest rates can be reasonable, but you'll shrink your retirement savings. If you lose your job, you'll be required to pay the loan back sooner, usually in 90 days. And if you can't, you'll owe taxes and a 10% penalty unless you're 59 and a half years or older. A home equity line of credit. The interest rates for borrowing against your home equity are usually reasonable, particularly if you maintain a good credit rating. But if you're not a perfect borrower, you could be denied or get an unfavorable rate. And if you end up borrowing more than your equity and have to sell in a hurry, you'd have to cough up the difference. Finally, the interest on HELOCs is no longer tax deductible unless the funds are used for home improvements. Hardship withdrawals. Funds you can take out of a 401k via a hardship withdrawal cannot be paid back, and you'll owe taxes on any untaxed dollars that you pull out. You'll also owe a 10% penalty unless you're 59 and a half years or older, or your situation meets one of several exceptions. Those taxes can take a big bite out of the amount that you get from your account. A reverse mortgage. We see this on TV all the time. A reverse mortgage allows homeowners 62 or older to receive a pool of assets that represents equity in their homes. They don't have to repay the loan as long as they're in their homes, but when they leave, the borrowed amount plus interest is deducted from the home's value. Rates can vary, so shop around and read the fine print. Those loans can be costly and complicated. A margin account will allow you to borrow against the value of securities in your brokerage account. You might do this if you don't want to sell the assets at a bad time or incur tax consequences. Interest rates aren't always attractive, plus margin loans are risky because the security's value can fluctuate with the market. If your collateral drops below a certain level, your brokerage firm will require you to deposit more money or sell those securities. If you don't have the cash, you can end up in an even bigger financial bind. And lastly, credit cards. Some consumers have been able to play credit cards like a fiddle, shifting balances amongst cards with an ultra-low teaser rate and incurring little interest. For the rest of us, credit cards are the single easiest way to wreck your financial standing. Rates are high, and credit card companies want you to keep paying for as long as possible. Thus, the minimum payments they require don't even make a dent in your principal. Okay, let's stop talking about money things. I hate money. Let's talk about some weather. All right, it was beautiful weather this week, and that weather will continue with just a slight chance of showers later in the week. We got a couple of days that'll be rain-free. On Monday, mostly cloudy with showers and a chance of thunderstorms, but highs in the 70s. On Tuesday, partly cloudy with showers, and again, a chance of showers, 82% chance. Okay, I guess I take that back. All week, we're supposed to have a chance of rain except for Thursday. But that's okay. The gardens need rain, and so does the grass. Around the region this week, Albany checked in the mid-70s. In Geneva, they also had the mid-70s. Our low temperatures around the area in New York State was Lake Placid in the low 60s, and our high temperatures were in Poughkeepsie in the 80s. Around the United States, Anchorage checking in the 60s, Denver in the 80s. Of course, triple digits in Las Vegas, that's summertime for them, as well as Palm Springs and Phoenix. And low temperatures across the country, we're probably looking at, where's the 60s? Do we have any 60s across the country? No, just the low 70s in San Diego. Around the world, Acapulco is checking in now in the 90s. In London, in the mid 80s. In Paris, in the 90s as well. And in Toronto, Vancouver, those areas were in the 70s. So summertime, summer arrives tomorrow. That is the first day of summer officially. It will be the longest day of the year, the summer solstice, on the 21st. So 12 hours of daylight. That's pretty cool. Well, what's going on around the area so we can enjoy that summer weather? Looking at Tuesday, Jelly Roll will be in concert bringing his tour to the Empower Federal Credit Union Amphitheater at Lakeview in Syracuse. Special guests will be Cassius Culpepper, and known for his hits like Son of a Sinner, Need a Favor, and I Am Not Okay, Jelly Roll holds three Grammys, including the 2026 Best Contemporary Country Album Award. His concert starts at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, and tickets start at $48. The Downtown Committee of Syracuse will hold its first public open house for its Downtown Syracuse Vision and Strategic Action Plan, giving community members a chance to review the initial findings, share ideas, and help shape the future of downtown. You can connect with project team members, identify priorities, contribute to the values to guide future decision-making. There will be no formal remarks, so participants can arrive at any time. It'll be at the Atrium Building lobby at 100 South Salina Street in Syracuse. Go in through the Clinton Street entrance from 5 to 6:30 on Tuesday, and it is free. Tuesday through Saturday, Clinton Square is trading ice skates for roller skates with pop-up roller rink. You can rent skates or bring your own. The rink will operate like the winter ice skating that runs in the square each year. Thursday is Pride Night, and Saturday is Mayor's Night, hosted by Mayor Sharon Owens. Tickets can be purchased at the Atrium. Cash and credit cards are accepted. The Clinton Square downtown in Syracuse from 11 to 2 and 5 to 8 on Tuesday and Wednesday, 11 to 2 and 6 to 9 on Thursday, and 6 to 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Admission is $5 and skate rental is $5. Comedian Daniel Tosh's My First Farewell Tour is coming to the On-Center Krause Heinz Theater. The stand-up comedian is known for his Tosh.0 on Comedy Central that ran from 2009 to 2020. He's released multiple specials, including Happy Thoughts and Completely Serious, and hosts the podcast Tosh Show. 411 Montgomery Street in Syracuse, 7 p.m. Wednesday. The remaining tickets will start at $102. The Baldwinsville Community Band will perform a one-hour concert open to the public at the Canton Woods Senior Center. No intermission is planned. For a full program list, you can call 315-638-4956, 76 Canton Street in Baldwinsville at 7 p.m. on Wednesday. It is free. The Soundgarden's annual Flicks on the Crick film series will take place Wednesdays in June as movies are projected on the side of the record store. This year's lineup features nostalgic comedies from the 1980s and 90s. Bring your lawn chair, picnic baskets, and snacks to watch this week's Empire Records. 310 West Jefferson Street from sundown around 7:30 to 8 on Wednesday, and it is free to attend. The WCNY Courtyard will host a FIFA World Cup watch party as Scotland takes on Brazil at 415 West Fayette Street in Syracuse from 5 to 9 on Wednesday, and it is free to attend. The Everson Museum of Art's introductory class covering ceramics with pottery wheel techniques and hand-building methods, including pinch, coil, and slab construction. Students will throw and trim on the wheel, then glaze their bisque firework with food-safe glazes in the final session. The fee includes the clay, glazes, and firing fees. There are only 12 spots available. Registration is required. Members should log into their member account to receive a discounted rate. Questions can be directed to instructor Catherine Walsh at cwalsh@everson.org. 401 Harrison Street in Syracuse. They'll run from 1:30 to 4:30 Thursdays from June 25th to July 30th. For non-members, it's $350 for the sessions, and for Everson members, it's $280. Elite Gaming's Underground Bar and Restaurant is hosting an 18-plus social evening themed around music festival culture, featuring specialty cocktails, craft beer, trivia, and casual gaming. The night will include a set by DJ Lost Echoes, followed by music-themed trivia and 2v2 Super Smash Brothers. Ultimate Festival-inspired attire is encouraged. Pre-registration will close at noon on Thursday. Register at tinyurl.com/elitegamingfest. It's at 2 Clinton Square in Syracuse, 7:30 on Thursday. A $10 pre-registration includes your first specialty cocktail and bar snacks. Free admission will begin at 8 p.m. Thursday through June 28th is the Middle Eastern Festival, the annual Middle Eastern Festival at St. Elias Antiochian Orthodox Church. Features homemade Middle Eastern food, live Arabic music, traditional dancing, church tours, and more. The family-friendly event is open to the public. Credit cards are accepted. More information at SyracuseMideastFest.com at 4988 Onondaga Road in Syracuse. It'll start Thursday night, 4 to 9, 4 to 10 on Friday, noon to 10 on Saturday, and noon to 5 on Sunday the 28th. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. More things to do starting next weekend. Lotus Land will bring the music of legendary progressive rock power trio Rush to life at the Turning Stone Resort Casino Showroom. The acclaimed tribute act delivers highlights from Rush's 40-year catalog, including Tom Sawyer, Closer to the Heart, Subdivisions, Fly by Night, and Natural Science. Tickets are at Ticketmaster.com or Turning Stone Guest Services. 5218 Patrick Road in Verona at 8 p.m. on Friday, and its tickets will start at $36. When the World Cup takes a watch party, the World Cup Norway takes on France, they'll have a watch party again at the WCNY Courtyard. That'll be on Friday from 2 to 6, and that is free. Grammy-winning Christian music artist Toby Mac will headline a concert with Zach Williams, at the Empower Credit Union Amphitheater next weekend on Friday. Toby Mac is known for his work in the 90s with rap group DC Talk and hits such as Speak Life, Jesus Freak. Seth Schulter and Jamie McDonald will open. Tickets are at Ticketmaster. It's at 490 Restoration Way in Syracuse at 7 p.m. on Friday, and the tickets start at $25. Next Saturday, one of the longest-running triathlons in North America returns to the Adirondacks, welcoming more than 400 athletes from across the U.S. and abroad. Choose from five race formats, ranging from the full Tin Man half-distance event to a sprint option, with distances to suit athletes at every level. The event is community-driven and serves as a cornerstone of Tupper Lake summer season. Registration is required by Wednesday by going to tupperlaketinman.com. It's at Tupper Lake, 8 a.m. next Saturday, and the prices range from $130 to $322 for registration. B&R Bunkhouse, the municipal dog shelter for the city of Syracuse, is hosting a public adoption event. If you're looking to add a furry companion to your family, this is an opportunity to meet the dogs in need of permanent homes. It is open to the public. They're located at 6225 East Taft Road in North Syracuse. It will run from 11:30 to 2 next Saturday, and it is free to attend. The Song and Dance and Iconica are hosting a community garage sale to close out Pride Month with drag closet cleanouts, queer art, vintage finds, oddities, costumes, wigs, props, records, and more. Vendors will include performers, artists, makers, local businesses, and crafters. It will be open to the public, and it's at 115 East Jefferson Street in Syracuse from 11 to 5 on June 28th, and it is free to attend, except for the stuff you're going to buy, of course. NAMI Walks, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, will happen next weekend. Syracuse, that organization supports individuals and families affected by mental illness through advocacy, education, and public awareness. This event at Burnett Park features casual walking, food, drinks, speakers, and family-friendly activities, including face painting, a photo booth, balloon animals, and a board-breaking demonstration to break the stigma surrounding mental illness. Proceeds will support NAMI Syracuse's programs and the services in the Central New York community. To register or donate, visit namiwalks.org/Syracuse. That'll be at 299 Coleridge Ave in Syracuse from 11 to 1. Registration will open at 10:30 a.m. on the 28th, and it is free to attend. And finally, the 5th Annual Tri-Lakes Pride event brings speakers, parades, exhibitors, and entertainment to the downtown Saranac Lake and Riverside Park. The free event welcomes LGBTQ+ community members, families, friends, local officials, and allies. Proceeds from the exhibit space sales will benefit the three local organizations addressing food insecurity: the Saranac Lake Interfaith Food Pantry, the Tupper Lake Community Food Pantry, and Lake Placid Thrive and Thrift. It'll be at Riverside Park in Saranac Lake, noon to 4 p.m. on the 28th. The parade begins at noon near the post office. The dance party is from 3 to 4. It's free to attend, and donations of non-perishable food items, hygiene products, and monetary contributions will all be accepted at the event. Lots of stuff to do in the area as summer arrives. So from our CNY Inspirations column, What Gandalf Told Pope Leo XIV by Dave Pacinski. I wonder if it was an impressionable teenager that Pope Leo read The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, and came across the phrase he uses now in his new encyclical. Quote, "It is not our part to master all the tides of the world, but to do what is in us for the succor or assistance of those years wherein we are for uprooting the evil in the fields so that those who live after us may have a clear earth to till." Unquote. It is both challenging and affirming to read this in his encyclical Magnifica Humanitas on the safeguarding of the human person in the time of artificial intelligence. Pope Leo frames this as a challenge between using a world-changing technology to build a doomed Tower of Babel or to unite human community in creating a city where all humanity can prosper. I take hope in the Gandalf and Pope Leo that artificial intelligence is more than technology, but also a phenomenon that can be both beneficial and maleficent and cannot and must not replace the human spirit. While this encyclical is not beach reading, many sources call it one of the most important texts to help us begin understanding the human dimensions that must be highlighted in this new era of AI. I'm reading it now and find some of the parts challenging and others almost lyrical. His second sentence got to me. Each generation inherits the task of shaping its own era, of guiding history to become a place where the dignity of every person is safeguarded, justice is promoted, and fraternity made possible. I need to meditate on that. And it reminds me of another phrase that comes to me from Lord of the Rings. Frodo laments, "I wish it need not have happened in my time." And the wise Gandalf again explains, "So do I, but so do all who live to see such times, but it is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that has been given us." So whether Pope Leo or Gandalf is to whom we look to for guidance, we've got a lot to do, and it's our time to do it. Dave Pazinski is active in different community groups and workshops at St. Lucie's and Plymouth Church. So as you're out and about enjoying the summer weather, you might be wondering, is this flower edible? Well, maybe, maybe not. Let's take a look at honeysuckle. Okay. June is a stunning month on many levels, and the sky seems bluer, the sun seems warm gently, and the air begins to simmer, stirring up perfume from the blooms below. That's when the scents rise from the slow drip of honeysuckle. This is from Pamela Silvestri at silvestri@siadvance.com. And so we're in this sensory stretch of early summer when floral sweetness wafts through the neighborhoods. A flowering vine now blooming through August offers more than fragrance. It's something you can actually taste. I've been doing this since I was a kid, eating it. The white and yellow blooms produce a pinhead of nectar that tastes like a floral dewdrop mixed with honey. Extracting it requires pinching the flower's trumpet base and giving it a gentle squeeze to release the sweet liquid. That simple ritual for many recalls childhood summers. But every year, it's worth heeding the advice of local floral educators who warn foragers to exercise caution. Honeysuckle often grows entwined with poison ivy. Shiny leaves of three, let it be, and don't be a dope, don't touch the hairy rope. That's a reminder that refers to the fibrous stem of the poison ivy vine. And while the nectar from the flowers is generally safe to consume, the berries are toxic and should not be eaten. Experts also advise using only unsprayed plants to confirm edible variables. In the kitchen, the blossoms can be steeped in hot sugar water to create a simple syrup for lemonade, iced teas, and cocktails. Well, as the onset of summer begins, let's take a look around the outdoors column and see how to soak up the sun Central New York style. When your winters are like ours, you learn to appreciate the gifts that summer brings. So they have a list of ways to soak up those warm weather vibes, from roadside barbecues to canal cruises, by MJ Kravick. Shake up your wake up. Try a sunrise yoga session, or just do it on your back deck. But you can actually go to downtown Syracuse, thanks to the Metro Fitness and Syracuse Department of Parks, Recreation, and Youth Programs. They're free community classes that are built at every level of experience, and you're encouraged to bring your own mats, though some extras are available, and parking on the street is free before 9 a.m. Group workouts will take place across Clinton Square starting in July. You can stock up at your favorite local farmers market. Bring a straw hat for the Casanova Farmers Market. Find homegrown fruits and vegetables, locally made crafts and foods, including baked goods, cheeses, honey, coffee, jams, eggs, meats, all from within 150 miles of Casanova. And while you're there, you can stroll the picturesque village sidewalks and check out the local shops, or even stay for lunch. The market runs from 9 to 2 Saturdays through October 24th at Memorial Park on Albany Street. Looking a little closer to home, check with your local cooperative extension. They have lists of markets across New York State. The 50th Lorenzo Driving Competition is July 17th to the 19th at the Lorenzo State Historic Site in Casanova, showcasing horse and carriage driving, dress, and style. Activities each day will start around 9 and feature shops, food trucks, donkeys, kid activities, and more. Friday evenings, join the welcome reception. $10 at the door includes a souvenir glass with free refills, the Syracuse Orchestra String Quartet performance, carriage rides, and a spirited hat contest, and you can tour the 19th century mansion. How about taking a nature walk? Immerse yourself in the wellness walking group at Beaver Lake Nature Center. This self-guided morning walk encompasses a few miles on a variety of trails, or take the 3-mile loop around the lake. You stay for coffee and socialize after the walk. It will start at 10 Mondays and Wednesdays. For a guided tour, you can try the Friday evening wildlife walks with a naturalist. There are 5 dates this summer. See beaverlakenature.org. It is free with the park admission, $5 per vehicle. The Skinny Atlas Curbstone Festival is 9 to 6 from July 9th and 10th, and 9 to 5 on July 11th, with fashion, home goods, jewelry, artwork, plants, and more from brick-and-mortar stores and pop-up shops in a charming lakeside village setting. Browse displays along Genesee and Jordan streets. Balloon artists will entertain the children throughout the weekend, and the Skinny Atlas Library will host a huge book sale at the site of its future home from Thursday to Sunday. That's July 10th through the 11th. You can have a picnic dinner with a side of theater for a classic Shakespeare outdoor theater experience in a beautiful setting. Don't miss Syracuse Shakespeare's in the Park at Thorndon Park Amphitheater. This season's productions include Taming of the Shrew in August. Each show runs for 2 weekends. Bring your picnic basket or lawn chairs or spring for premium seating, which includes that lawn chair, a $10 food voucher, a water bottle, and an ice cream token. General admission is free, but donations are welcome. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. This year marks the 48th annual Antique and Classic Boat Show from July 24th to the 26th at Clift Park in Skinny Atlas. It features more than 80 antique and classic boats and motors on display in the water and on land. Live music, a boat parade, spectator cruise on the Judge Ben Wills, kids activities, demos, shopping, and raffles. Awards are presented in 35 categories, including the coveted People's Choice Award. Hours are 3 to dusk on Friday, 9 to dusk on Saturdays, and 8 to 2 on Sundays. That's July 24th to the 26th. You can go back in Central New York history with a canal boat ride at the Camillus Erie Canal Park. The only boat ride in New York on the historic Erie Canal, this narrated tour runs 45 minutes round trip and goes over the restored 1842 Nine Mile Creek Aqueduct. Public rides take place Wednesday and Sundays at 1, 2, and 3 p.m. And the cost is only $5 for adults, $3 for children 4 to 12, $15 for a nuclear family maximum, that's parents, grandparents, plus children and grandchildren, and free for kids under 4. Tickets can be purchased the day of at Sims Store Museum, which is open Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday and Sunday from noon to 4. And that is lots of fun to go down the Erie Canal in a boat and be told about the history. Or you could dig in at a roadside barbecue, drive out to Homer's roadside hotspot, Bob's Barbecue, and eat at one of the stands covered picnic tables, or take your food home. People come from miles around for the brisket, ribs, pulled pork, chicken, and Hoffman Hots. Dinners are served with a choice of 2 sides that include, when available, baked beans, coleslaw, cornbread, macaroni salad, sweet corn, and salt potatoes. The dessert options are homemade brownies, assorted cookies, cheesecake, cakes, and homemade pies. This year, they've added Wednesdays and Thursdays, so you don't have to wait for the weekend to get a little messy. And speaking of desserts, this week's edition in the Upstate Travel column includes Upstate ice cream spots that have been dessert favorites, summer favorites for 50 years or more by Chuck D'Imperio. Anyone who has traveled the back roads and byways of upstate New York in summer knows there's plenty of great little ice cream stands around every corner. From the Adirondacks to Western New York, they're all a hallmark of any upstate road trip. And here's a list of ice cream stands worth seeking out. What makes this list unique? All are at least 50 years old. They're true vacation landmarks serving generations of travelers. So Boise Ice Cream, Boise Brothers. It has served the Kingston area for more than a century. It is in the Hudson Valley, and it was established in 1914. Mountain Mist Ice Cream is in Saranac Lake and was established in 1950. Parkside Candy and Ice Cream is in Buffalo, was established in 1927. Purity Ice Cream Parlor in Ithaca was established in 1936. Martha's Dandy Ice Cream in Queensbury was established in 1947. Abbott's Frozen Custard in Rochester was established in 1926. Donnelly Soft Ice Cream in Saranac Lake, 1953. Curver Cream in Albany, 1952. Seneca Farms Ice Cream, Penn Yan, in 1950. Also in Saratoga, The Farmer's Daughter in 1965. A little closer to home, Polar Bear Ice Cream in Oneonta in 1949. Big Dip, North Syracuse in 1955. Snowtop in Manlius in 1957, and the Snowman in Troy in 1951. 50 years these places have been around and been serving customers
in the central New York and other parts of New York State with our ice cream urges for the summer. So what else can we do over the weekend and the upcoming week? Because it is forecast to rain, well, let's take a look at what's going to be happening on the TV. The first project from Larry David since the end of Curb Your Enthusiasm is a 7-episode sketch comedy series produced by Barack and Michelle Obama. It will satirize several events in American history with the familiar Curb Your Enthusiasm faces alongside Bill Hader, John Hamm, Katherine Hahn, and Jerry Seinfeld. And that will be running on HBO starting on Friday. On television, the third of what eventually will be a 4th season will launch with the first of 8 episodes of House of Dragon, kind of a sequel to the Game of Thrones, Sunday at 9 p.m. on HBO and then streaming on HBO Max. The Bear, 5th and final season of the Emmy-winning hit series, will hit its 8-episode stream entirely on Hulu. Episodes will also air on FX Thursdays at 9 p.m. on FX and then streaming on Hulu. Other streaming shows, a 5-part series, Netflix series examining the founding of the United States as the country celebrates its 250 years called The American Experiment. That begins streaming at Wednesday on Netflix. Wild Cherry, a 6-part 2025 BBC thriller about a scandal in a wealthy enclave, makes its American debut on Paramount Plus. That'll begin streaming on Wednesday. A Woman of Substance, Brenda Blethyn and Jessica Reynolds play Emma Hart in the different time periods in an 8-episode adaptation of Barbara Taylor Bradford novels that will begin streaming Wednesday on BritBox. The Super Mario Galaxy movie will come to the TV. The Mario gang set out for outer space to find and rescue Princess Peach's long-lost sister, Princess Rosalina, in its follow-up to the 2023 animated hit on Scream 7, Sydney Prescott, Neve Campbell, contends with another ghost-faced killer terrorizing her home, family, and teen daughter in the horror franchise's latest entry. All of these are now available on video. Ready or Not 2, Here I Come, in a sequel to the 2019 flick, a young woman, Samara Weaving, and her sister, Catherine Newton, have to outlive a murderous attempt of a satanic billionaire cult in a bloody game of hide-and-seek. Me, You, and Tuscany, a young American woman goes on a spontaneous trip to Italy and falls in love with many misunderstandings in a rom-com starring Halle Bailey and Regé Jean Page. A Knight in the Seven Kingdoms, the complete first season, its Game of Thrones prequel, taking place a century before that series events, based on the author George R.R. Marin's novella, The Tales of Duncan Egg. It's a story of a lowborn knight and his child squire. And Deepwater, after passengers survive a plane crash in the Pacific Ocean, they have a new problem, sharks. In this drama helmed by Rennie Harlan, Aaron Eckhart, and Ben Kingsley that head the ensemble. So things to watch while you're waiting for the rain to clear up. And looking what's happening in the movie theaters, Pixar's Playthings will grapple with high-tech devices in Toy Story 5. They got a 3 out of 5, 4 stars rating from Katie Walsh. After the emotional climax or terrorism of Toy Story 3, every subsequent Toy Story installment has had to earn its relevance. Toy Story 4 in 2019 saw Woody grappling with poignant questions about time passing and the utility of toys in a child's life, while the latest film, Toy Story 5, rushes in with an urgent warning, one of the scariest current threats to childhood and indeed life itself, screen time. Woody and the gang find themselves tackling tech, with cowgirl Jessie leading the charge. The film is about the harm that technology, devices, and screens can have on the impressionable minds of kids. But the lessons here are applicable to everyone of all ages. As a group of abandoned toys delivered a litany of warnings to Jessie about the dangers of allowing tech in the house, I had to ask a nearby man to turn off his phone. Oh, the irony. He left shortly thereafter, but could have used the lessons imparted in this Disney Pixar piece, co-written and directed by Andrew Stanton, the writer of the original films, and Kenna Harris, making her feature debut. Stanton and Harris do not whiff a crucial element in delivering a 5th Toy Story, even if it does feel a bit overly busy with overlapping, intertwining storylines. This fifth installment might not feel as weighty as some of the other Toy Stories, but the animation remains beautiful, the humor heartfelt, and this group of toys still has some play left in them and some lessons to impart. So for a moment, tuck those screens away and enjoy another romp with Buzz, Jessie, and Woody. While I don't often read from the opinion page of the newspaper, there was one article that caught my eye because this is Father's Day weekend. It's called Dad Gave Me Three Pieces of Advice. This One Surprised Me by Theodore R. Johnson from the Washington Post. On the way back to our minivan, after finishing the move into my dorm room freshman year, my father slowed his pace so a little distance could build between us and the rest of the family. I knew what was coming. Some version of the talks that parents give their teenagers in moments like this, when they go off to school, the military, or a new life elsewhere. I was prepared to hear pieces of advice about the first year of college from father to son, but I learned with time that they were deeper lessons for life, succinct and plain spoken from one man to another. "Hey man, listen," he said, "work hard and keep your nose clean." It was the one bit of advice I could have predicted. College was an advantage that could be quickly undone by a lack of effort or poor decisions. And no reminders were needed that my family hadn't sent me to school to be average or foolish. It was an investment, too, certainly for my parents, but mostly for my future. His advice was less a mandate to behave than a warning to not squander the opportunity. The second adage was just as straightforward. Don't go getting into a whole lot of debt. This was the 90s, when the credit card companies welcomed students to campus with a free pizza for anyone who signed up for an account, a practice Congress restricted in 2009. His wisdom came from growing up in South Carolina, part of a debtor system that killed many American dreams. After being sent to the fields instead of school, he left home at 14, unwilling to surrender his ambitions of independence. He learned the hard way that one of the greatest advantages of life is to be young and black. These messages of self-determination and economic stability were well received, if also well worn. They were tenets of respectability, politics, a long-established church-based practice that encouraged moral behavior and diligence as an imperfect but accessible way of mitigating discrimination. 20 years after my father's advice, President Barack Obama offered the same counsel to graduates of Morehouse College, the nation's only all-male historically black college. Delivering the commencement address, he reminded them of the nobody mantra. Nobody is going to give you anything that you have not earned. Nobody cares how tough your upbringing was. Nobody cares if you suffered some discrimination. But if you stay hungry, if you keep hustling, if you keep your grind and get other folk to do the same, nobody can stop you. Over the years, I learned there was more in my father's counsel. Time in the military, in business, and public taught the importance of keeping one's nose clean of trouble, but of also keeping one's pride intact. It came to mean the importance of not currying favor as a means of getting ahead. Earn your place. Don't be a sycophant. And the warning about debt was as much financial guidance as it was social. Don't spend money you don't have. Don't make threats you can't keep and promises you can't keep. Stop walking for a third and final lesson. Go places by yourself, he said. Don't be afraid to go alone. Leaving home can be a daunting experience, something he knew from way better than I did. Finding friends makes the transition easier and exciting, but he wanted me to learn how to be confident walking to any room alone. It was permission to go to the cafeteria or a social event or hear a guest lecture by myself, even when friends weren't interested. It was a date to explore, go see the world for myself. So the family minivan pulled off, and I walked back into my dorm room alone, a firm hold on the pearls of wisdom passed down to me. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the weekend edition of the Post Standard. As always, we welcome your feedback, what you liked, what you didn't like, what you may want to hear that we're not covering. Your reader has been Donna, and we thank you for listening.